Welcome back to Eco Talk. Not sure if you've seen the current edition of Newsweek magazine, but it's great. It's green, yet another mainstream publication after Time Magazine, Vanity Fair, now Newsweek, talking about the new greening of America, from politics to lifestyle, why saving the environment is suddenly hot in more ways than one. And one of the many wonderful green people quoted in that article is Reverend Sally Bingham from San Francisco, and she is joining us for this edition, this segment of Eco Talk. Also, we'll be joined by Rabbi Troster, Lawrence Troster. He's a rabbinic fellow at COGEL, that's Coalition on the Environment and Jewish Life, also a Jewish chaplain of Baird College, talking about how religious leaders and their communities are really beginning to take on fighting the damage that's being caused to our environment in a big way, and not only preaching what they practice, practicing what they preach. It works both ways. So pleased to welcome to the Eco Talk studio Sally Bingham, a longtime friend of mine. Her license plate says Eco Gal, Eco Sal. Mine says Eco Talk. Our offices in the Presidio are near each other, so we have been aware of each other's work for years, and it's a great pleasure to welcome you back.
Thank you, and it's always a great pleasure to be here with you, Betsy.
Thank you, and Rabbi Troster is on the line. Thank you also for being with us.
It's a pleasure, Betsy.
We want to begin with Reverend Bingham to talk about some specific action taking place by the religious community in California. Just a few days ago, 130 clergy signed an urgent appeal to Governor Schwarzenegger and the state legislature here to lobby lawmakers to pass mandatory caps on greenhouse gases, that is AB 32. Before we get into the specifics of that, Sally, tell us about your work with the California Interfaith Power and Light, and then what led up to your recent trip to Sacramento.
Well, the Interfaith Power and Light program,
that's a mouthful,
calls for congregations to become members of the program, which is free to them, and then to practice energy efficiency, conservation, use renewable energy if they can, and to support the goals of our organization, which is to get off our dependency on fossil fuels. It's a religious response to global warming.
You are one of the early leaders in the overall religious community to take this on.
We started about 10 years ago with Episcopal Power and Light, but it grew into Interfaith Power and Light, and we have programs in 18 states around the country now.
Growing.
Growing all the time.
Terrific. So tell us about AB 32. Why did this seem like something the religious community should get involved with?
Well, it was, I think, just about a little over a year ago when our governor announced that global warming was a problem and that the science was in and he was going to do something about it.
The science was in, the debate was over.
That's right. And then Assemblywoman Pavley and our House leader,
she's from Southern
Nunez,
California, Fran Pavley.
And then Nunez, yes, co-sponsored the bill with her. And AB 32 is the first legislation to call for mandatory caps on greenhouse gases. And we believe that that is probably the only way that we're really going to cut our greenhouse gases to the degree that they need to be cut to stop this problem of global warming.
So even though Governor Schwarzenegger, the man who brought us the Hummer, who was going through recycling himself and really becoming a pretty good leader on fighting global warming, even though he set these goals for California, it was felt that legislation was needed to back that up?
Well, yes, because nothing had actually been done in terms of regulation. And while some people think that it will work if we volunteer, I think that history has proven that the volunteers are few and far between, and it doesn't really work. We need legislation.
You got to walk the eco talk. It sounds good. At the World Environment Day is where Schwarzenegger made that announcement, and it got a lot of applause, but we need to actually start acting, which is the theme of today's show, no time like the present to take on our huge environmental challenges. I want to check in with Rabbi Troster. You've been working in this area of religion, Judaism in particular, and ecological stewardship for quite a few years yourself.
Yeah, at this point, about 20 years, actually.
And what is happening today, these days, recently, that really has you more convinced than ever that there is a role for religion in taking on this battle?
Well, more and more we're seeing across the country, across all faiths, I hear this from many different people, that on a very grassroots level, religious congregations are taking it upon themselves not only to green themselves in terms of their facilities, but also to try and become models for greening their membership and spreading the word amongst their membership, but also taking active political roles and attempting to lobby both local and national politicians to really confront this incredible crisis.
Now, Al Gore, in his fabulous movie, An Inconvenient Truth, talks about how this is not a political challenge addressing global warming. It's a moral challenge. It's also a religious and spiritual challenge. They're all connected, obviously. How, in your talks to your congregants, Rabbi, do you make this relevant and let folks know that this may not be something that they thought about as a top concern, but it's absolutely vital to our future.
Well, you know, it's a universal human crisis, and to ignore it, and to say that religions have nothing to say about it is to render, I think, religions almost irrelevant in this day and age. And I think that what Al Gore has said, and he said this for a long time, and I first heard him speak when his book came out many years ago.
Earth and the Balance.
Exactly. And that was a book that really inspired me as well, that this is a crisis of values. It's a spiritual crisis. It's how we view our relationship to the natural world. With, in the Abrahamic traditions, we say creation. And so if we truly believe that the world is God's creation, then that has certain spiritual implications and theological implications for how we relate to the earth, and we need to take those seriously.
And Reverend Bingham, how do you speak to those who are non-believers in terms of the environmental crises that we're faced with? I know that you had some resistance, and I'm sure you continue to, from some who feel this is not appropriate for being, you know, talked about on Sundays.
But more and more people are coming to realize that it is a responsibility of faith. And we can point out, which the rabbis already mentioned, there are lots of places in Scripture that point to environmental stewardship. God put Adam in the garden to till it and to keep it. And in the New Testament, where it says, love your neighbor as yourself, which is the second commandment. If you love your neighbor, you don't pollute your neighbor's air or water. And I see this as the greatest moral issue of our time. I am in full step with Al Gore on that point, because I believe it's going to define how we treat each other. What is this generation going to go down in history as having left? What are we leaving to the next generations? And it's about how we treat each other.
So you don't spend as much time as you used to trying to convince people that this is something relevant to religion. That's getting easier, hopefully.
It's getting easier.
As it should. One of the slogans for EcoTalk is greening the red and blue states one show at a time, because we're all in the same boat and it appears to be sinking. And along those lines, Rabbi Troster, you went to Iran and presented a paper on environmentalism as the foundation of dialogue between civilizations. And I really like that, because this is the common denominator. We're so divided as a country. Lord knows there's enough strife going on around the world. But if we don't have human habitat that is sustainable, none of this is going to matter. So
absolutely. That's why I said it was a universal human crisis. And I also think it's the kind of thing that religions can come together, both internally in terms of the various denominations within religions, as also between faiths, that it is an issue that isn't going to divide them, because there's so much agreement on the nature of the crisis. Now, religions may speak in different languages, they may have different emphases, but the fact of the matter is that I have never seen such unity amongst Jews as in terms of my Jewish work, but also my extensive interfaith work, between religions on the need to go out and to do this.
And there's nothing like a common goal, you know, or common enemy, which is our ignorance and apathy and lack of action, to bring people together.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So
and I also think that there's a kind of common spiritual quest involved in this. And you know, when I gave this paper in Iran, which was under the auspices of the United Nations Environment Program, it was a special conference on environment, peace, and dialogue between civilizations. I talked about not only the element, sort of the obvious element of the crisis, but also the way in which this can provide a kind of common spiritual basis for us to talk to each other.
So how can we take that, you know, it's so obvious, it's such a profound truth, and sort of package it and take it on the road and get that message out in a more, you know, proactive, rapid way?
Well, I think we need more religious leaders to be speaking about it. I think one of the problems is that heads of congregations are so busy and have so many priorities, and a lot of them just don't know what to say. They don't know how to begin. And this is where grassroots organizations can be very helpful. We have to train the clergy, and we have to provide them with the means to be able to find the people in their congregations who are really excited about this, and then use that to build a grassroots effort within the congregation. This has to come both from the bottom at the top at the same time.
And you want to add something?
And that's absolutely right. And one of the things we're hoping to do is have summer interns, people who are in seminary, come into our program during the summer months and learn that there are other ways to do religion than be head of a parish. And we have two summer interns this year, and we're hoping next year to to have a great many more in our different programs around the country.
Yeah, and I'm also involved with an interfaith group in New Jersey called Green Faith, and we're in the process of developing an interfaith clergy training program that would do exactly the kinds of things I'm talking about, which would confront clergy, but also train them professionally as well as personally and spiritually on what to bring back to their own faith, but also to their communities.
Are you seeing either of you churches, synagogues, putting solar panels on, or is that just too great an expense? I know we're renovating our synagogue in Tiburon, California, Cultural Far, and I'm on the building committee just to be a stand for greening it when we do finally get to that stage.
Oh, we're seeing it happen, and we're lucky that in New Jersey the state government actually has a certain number of grants available for religious communities to do that. So it is happening, and more congregations are considering it.
There's one in Los Gatos called Shir Hadash, and they raised the money within the congregation and put a solar array on their roof. And they're now getting some 70% of their electricity from their own roof.
And I'm happy to say my late father, Jerry Rosenberg, contributed to that, which is a nice way to close the loop. And if I don't get too choked up here, Tikkun Olam, of course, is a key tenet to Judaism. We just have about 30 seconds, Rabbi, but describe how environmentalism fits right in there perfectly.
Well, Tikkun Olam means sort of fixing and repairing the world, and I've come to the conclusion it's kind of we're the ones who broke it, so it's we're the ones responsible for fixing it. There's a midrash which Jewish environmentalists like to quote, a rabbinic commentary in the Bible that says that God showed Adam and Eve around the Garden of Eden and said, "Here it is, my beautiful world. You know, you've got to take care of it, because if you destroy it, no one's going to come and fix it."
In the last 20 seconds, anything you want to share?
Just that I believe that the religious voice is exceedingly important in this debate, and that it's getting louder, it's being heard and sought after, and without it, nothing's going to change. But with it, it's going to happen.
Thank you, both of you, for raising your voices. We'll be right back.